Hello everyone and welcome to our final episode of this year. My name is Aga Bayramov and today our topic is the role of Belarus in the Ukrainian conflict. It's great pleasure and honor to welcome Tony van der Torch. He is a senior research fellow at the Klingendahl Russia and Eastern European Center in Den Haag. After studying the contemporary history in Amsterdam Vrije University and Nijmegen, he had a long career as a Dutch diplomat dealing with Eastern Europe and Central Asia, both in Den Haag and in Moscow, Almaty, and as Dutch Consular General in St. Petersburg. In 2013, he acted as Dutch co-coordinator of the Netherlands-Russia bilateral year. Tony, thanks a lot for joining us today. It's really great pleasure and timely to having you today, considering the events in the weekend and last week and what's going on in Ukraine and Belarus. Thanks for joining us. So I would like to start the first question regarding, since we have a broad audience. So what is the role of Belarus in the Ukrainian conflict?
Well, it's not as much an active role. It is more that Belarus now lets Russia use its territory for attacking Ukraine. For a very long time, Lukashenko didn't want this to happen. He also wanted to have good relations with Ukraine. He didn't recognize the annexation of Crimea in 2014. Mm. He wanted to mediate. Therefore, there were two Minsk agreements which he mediated together with Putin, with Poroshenko, and with Merkel and Hollande. So with the French, the Germans, and the Russians. So he tried to mediate in the conflict. But since the falsified elections in 2020 and the repression which followed, a lot of his bridges to the West were burned. So he became more and more dependent on Russia for continuing the repression, for, well, continuing with internal propaganda. And he had to agree to more integration in the context of what they call the Union State, which was always a kind of paper agreement dating from the 1990s. And since there were more Russian troops coming and this went further and further, his leeway to somehow keep out of this conflict became less and less. And in the end, he had to agree that Russian troops would attack from Belarusian territory, something mm-hmm. which he always tried to avoid.
Yeah.
And now the latest is he becomes more dependent on Putin and on the Russians for keeping his own hold on power. He had to agree to more and more Russian moves. So not only in the military sphere, also economically, financially, and most recently, the Russian wish to also put as a signal to the West tactical nuclear weapons on Belarusian territory. So these were all basically moves he had to agree to, although he knows very well that in Belarusian society, this is very unpopular. So there were a number of Belarusian patriots sabotaging actively Russian railways into Belarus, which were used for the war. And there are even Belarusians actively fighting on the Ukrainian side.
Exactly, yeah. Very interesting indeed developments from the side of Belarus. And since it's not actively involved, but kind of moving towards that, could you say that the Belarus role increase in the conflict from a passive to active involvement? Would it be the next step? Since every year or every month, as you said, the Belarusian leader actually is moving or depending on Putin more and more. So can we expect also active involvement in the conflict?
Yeah, that is a big discussion. I recently discussed this also with a number of, well, real Belarus experts, people from, let's say, the Belarusian opposition. And this is a possibility, but also which Lukashenko still wants to avoid almost at all cost, because mm-hmm. it will cost him internally a lot of political capital, and there will be even more opposition. So it is possible, but it is not very probable. And what we see now with the developments over the weekend, still quite a lot unclear whether Lukashenko really mediated in this conflict between Putin, the armed forces, and Prigozhin, the leader of this Wagner private military company, whether Wagner now really whether Prigozhin really moves to Belarus, as would have been part of the deal, or whether he will move there on his own or with a sizable number of Wagner combatants. Well, that is all still very much unclear, including the possible consequences that it would not be the Belarusian forces actively participating, but that Wagner would try to renew an attempt to capture Kiev. So this is still very speculative. And since we don't know, we don't even know where Prigozhin is right now.
Yeah.
So, but this is for Belarus, the wish for Lukashenko to stay out of this war still remains, not to have this active role, not because he fears the West, but because basically he fears the reaction of his own population.
Exactly.
And you could last weekend as well that since there was turmoil in Russia, that a number of Belarusian, let's say, armed opposition immediately already called for, well, let's use this opportunity to combat the dictator.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these two things are very closely intertwined right now. And if Russia really would lose influence because, well, let's say they lose big time in Ukraine, and this causes turmoil inside Russia, it could easily also cause turmoil inside Belarus. Because
exactly.
It would open up more opportunities for the opposition, including maybe armed opposition, uprising against Lukashenko.
And do you think that that's one of the main reasons that Lukashenko kind of mediated with the Wagner leader and Moscow to make sure that there is no turmoil in Russia? So next it will be him, actually his regime will be under danger if Russia is kind of moved to even a short-term or middle-term internal civil war or the strike between the regime and its own private military company. So then the Lukashenko's position will get even further weakened, as you said. So do you think it's also one of the motivation behind the Lukashenko to kind of play a mediation role?
Yes, he's not really profiting from instability in Russia. So to mediate, to be sure that the regime in Moscow stays in place, yes, that could very well be a motivation. If you compare it with Kazakhstan, the president, who was also called by Putin on Saturday, well, he flatly refused to have anything to do with it.
Exactly,
so he said, well, it's all an internal Russian matter. And I don't know whether Putin really considered having something like this CSTO, this Collective Security Treaty Organization, intervene to prop up the regime, like was done in Kazakhstan earlier on. But anyway, he didn't buy into that. But Lukashenko is in another position. So he is more close to the whole war and has a lot more to lose by Russian civil war, instability, or whatever.
And we talk about now Belarus-Russia relations and its role in Ukraine as well. But of course, the another player in this game is the European Union. And do you think the European Union fails to formulate a policy towards Belarus? That's why right now we ended up this situation. What is your opinion on the EU policy on Belarus?
I think that the EU policy towards Russia and towards Belarus could be more integrated, could be a more comprehensive policy. But the big problem there as well is that, well, we have several elements which apply either only to Russia or only to Belarus. So we have the policy of non-recognition of the Lukashenko regime, well, which is specifically targeted at Lukashenko and at the consequences of the falsified elections, the repression. The sanctions policies overlap, but are not exactly the same. So there as well, I think there are reasons to look at that more closely, to see how sanctions are intertwined. I mean, Belarus should also not be used for sanctions evasion, if we are talking about sanctions against Russia. And well, more in general, I think the EU should look more long-term towards, well, what kind of Russia would we like to see? Well, whether we can influence that or not is another question. And the same for Belarus. So to make sure for the population, both in Russia and in Belarus, that there could be an alternative and that we support people already in the West, in exile, who are working towards, let's say, a more democratic Belarus or a more democratic Russia. So I think we should be welcoming to both of them and have a more integrated policy. And another point in this discussion is whether we should look more closely in the sanctions to somehow promise some of the oligarchs who are sanctioned that if they switch sides, that sanctions could be lifted. Well, this is, of course, more heatedly debated, both concerning Russia and also concerning Belarus, whether that is possible at all. But yes, the EU sanctions here, they are targeted. But if you look at sanctions decided on by the US, for example, they are much more important than the EU sanctions, especially in the financial sphere. So this should all be coordinated also very closely with the US. If you want to make sanctions policy really effective and sanctions evasion, if you want to prevent that.
And you already answered, the following question, but maybe on a more specific term. How should the European Union approach the Belarus case in the conflict specifically, in addition to the sanctions as well? You said, of course, a Belarusian opposition leader is also supported by the European Union, and she is part of the, let's say, maybe the future of Belarus project. Or do you think the European Union should try to find a language with the current leader while there is already a turmoil in Russia? How would the EU strategy should be formulated, do you think?
Yeah, I think if there would really be a scenario in which Russia would lose influence, I think then the EU could have more leverage if Lukashenko wants to avoid being dragged into that turmoil as well. But it all depends very much on the war, also on whether someone like Prigozhin is going to play a more active role now from Belarus, if he really moves to Belarus. But I think there is, at the moment, apart from the leverage we have in the present situation, that we should really be prepared to see when Russia is starting to lose in Ukraine and also losing influence in other areas, that the EU should be able to adopt a kind of flexible policy to try to work with that. And whether that would also mean working in the end with Lukashenko, well, that is something that remains to be seen. This is also something which is also debated by the Belarusian opposition. There is a chance, of course, that somehow Lukashenko saves Belarus from this whole conflict and that he is then the savior of Belarusian independence. Mm-hmm. Well, part of the opposition would then support him because he is then the guarantor of the territorial integrity, sovereignty of Belarus. But I think another sizable part of the opposition will remain in opposition. And then it's a big question for the EU, but also for Ukraine, how to react to that. So is it then still possible to split Lukashenko from Putin, or are they so closely intertwined that it is not possible? So we should have a flexible policy which is able to immediately react if the situation moves on.
Yeah. And something actually not related to Belarus per se, but related to what happened weekend before for our listeners. I want to say that the Wagner leader and Moscow, they had a fighting. They couldn't get along. And then the Wagner troops started to move towards Moscow. And there are a lot of speculation regarding this, the reasons behind it. And what is your explanation for this? Why do you think there was this disagreement? Because the Wagner leader is also very loyal to Putin, and suddenly some experts say it's against Putin, some say not. How would you reflect on it?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say. It looked like Prigozhin, maybe he also miscalculated and thought that in the end, Putin would somehow agree with him, fire his minister of defense, his chief of general staff. But Putin didn't do that. So he came out immediately opposed to mutiny, as he called it. He was very strong about this. So it could be that he miscalculated. It shows the weaknesses of the Russian system. I mean, most of the active forces are in Ukraine. So you also saw that when he really marched on Moscow, how easy it was to get to about 200 kilometers from Moscow to capture military facilities in Rostov, in Voronezh.
Even he get supporters in Rostov as well, in the military as well.
Yeah, so some switched sides, switched to Wagner. Some others just went away, so they didn't really actively oppose him. And now as well with this deal, there's a lot is still unclear what was really agreed, by whom are both sides going to stick to that agreement. So Prigozhin's fight was with the leadership of the Ministry of Defense. Well, I don't expect that this leadership will be fired as Prigozhin demanded. maybe after a while, but certainly not immediately now, because it looks then too much as that Putin is just giving in to the demands of Prigozhin. Mm-hmm. But a lot of things of this, it has shown the brittleness of the whole system. So everyone comes out much weaker. In a way, Ukraine may be able to profit, although on the battlefield, well, there's only some limited gains in territory over the weekend. I mean, the Russian attacks have not really stopped because of this whole internal affair. So it all remains very much to be seen how it will develop and how it will affect the war in Ukraine.
Great. Tony, thank you so much for this fruitful conversation, and it was really great to reflect on this timely topic and also close our final episode of this season with you. Thank you very much for joining us, and I also would like to say thank you for the listeners, and wait us until August. We will come back with a new episode with new fruitful and valuable guests. Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, thank you very much.